I know the Lord has a good message for you today, because I'm actually fulfilling the rest of 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 10. For a while I feel like I've always fulfilled part of it, that is to say, his appearance is unimpressive, but the second part I didn't fulfill, but now I will today. My speech is contemptible. So it must be that you have a good word today, because Paul reminds them that God was using his weakness to proclaim the message to them. We come to Matthew chapter 10, and we see this wonderful promise that God desires to use these men, strange bunch that they are. None of them seem to be talented. They perhaps seem to be a bit incompatible. All of them lay claim to insignificance according to the world standards. Nevertheless, God calls these men to do something amazing, to proclaim with great authority good. And they have unlimited authority to do that. If you look at the very beginning of chapter 10, it says that he gave them authority over unclean spirits to cast them out, to heal every kind of disease and every kind sickness. Unlimited authority to do good. Amazing, isn't it? This ragtag bunch of misfits are called to do something great. It's almost as if God takes pride in choosing the weak things to confound the wise. And certainly this is being proclaimed in this chapter. As we go on, we realize that they've been given a remarkable charge. What's remarkable about it? Well, they're boldly proclaiming the kingdom of heaven, unapologetically. Proclaiming who is worthy. Who is worthy? That's an interesting way to introduce yourself. For the kingdom of God. These nobodies are coming out that boldly. And they're going to be on such a mission that will bring the most perilous of conditions. They're going to be against the worst of times. Jesus doesn't seem to be pulling any punches with them. He tells them that they're going to be going before governors, but when they are going before the dignitaries, they're going to be delivered up, they're going to be beat, they're going to be thrown in prisons. And he goes on and he says, and don't worry when you are delivered up. You're not even allowed to worry about it. Bad enough that you have to go through it, you can't even worry about it. And he even goes to the extent that family members are going to be against you. I can't think of anything much worse than that. Everybody's going to be against you. For what? Doing good. That's it. We've been called to proclaim the kingdom of heaven. Jesus is letting us know in this passage it's not going to be an easy task. For those of you who think that everybody should just welcome you with open arms, you haven't read enough scripture. Because it's very clear that it's going to be a difficult road. It doesn't seem it seems awful strange, and it doesn't seem right that people would hate you for proclaiming something good, for doing the right thing. You would think that, well, that would just be a natural welcome. And everything points to the contrary. It is with that Jesus begins to introduce to them a call. And the call is, do not be afraid. It is actually in the imperative, which is really a command. You can't be afraid. He puts it into three headings within the text. He'll actually use this phrase, do not be afraid, three times. If you look with me, you'll see that the first time in verse 26. Therefore, do not fear them. Verse 28, and do not fear. Once again, verse 31, therefore, do not fear. Now, in each case, it seems to be in what is called the causative. That is to say, don't allow them to cause you to be afraid. There are going to be things that are out there that seem ominous and perhaps would give you good cause to think that you should be afraid. And he says, don't let these things cause you to be afraid. You're going to be coming against these things. But I want you to walk by faith. You're representing the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. You have nothing to be afraid of. Fear is a big part of our world. Anxiety is a big part of our world. But Jesus is revealing that if you and I are walking in the truth, if we're walking in obedience to him, we have absolutely nothing to be afraid of. And he's going to give three reasons why you shouldn't be afraid, as well as identifying three things that we're normally afraid of. If you look with me, he begins in chapter 10 and verse 24 by talking about what it means to be a disciple. He lays down some very simple standards. What is a disciple? Well, a disciple is one that follows a teacher, and his desire is to be like him. He knows he's not going to surpass his teacher, then he would be the teacher. But it's to be like the teacher. Now, all of what he says, starting with verse 24 and in verse 25, is going to be actually joined and conjoined to do not fear. So if you pick up with me in verse 24, he lays a foundation as why you shouldn't fear. Verse 24. A disciple is not above his teacher, nor a slave above his master. A disciple is somebody who learns. A slave is somebody who obeys. It is enough for a disciple that he become as his teacher. That's the reason he's following him. His desire is to become like him. Teaching at that time was a lot different than it is now. A lot of times we do it in the classroom. Then a rabbi, well, you would walk around with the rabbi that you were wanting to follow, and you would learn from him and ask him questions, and you would walk with him and see what his daily life was about. Your desire was to be like that person discipling you. It is enough for a disciple to become as his teacher and a slave as his master. If they have called the head of the house Beelzebul. Now, some text, it's actually Beelzebub. But they are two different words. It is a title that was oftentimes used. Beelzebul means Lord of the household. Lord of the household. Beelzebub means Lord of the flies. It's interesting that the Pharisees would oftentimes do the twist, because this actually seems to go all the way back to the God of the Philistines. And the Pharisees would call Satan the Lord of the flies. They would call him the Lord of the household. They just did a little change in the word. They said, no, he's the Lord of dung. He's the Lord of the flies. It was a title that was mixed in that way. Jesus knows that. And Jesus is proclaiming, I know what they're calling me. Now, he uses the word Lord of the household, but the title is very clear. I know what they're calling me. They're calling me Lord of the flies. If you back up into chapter 9 and verse 34, it says the Pharisees were saying to Jesus, excuse me, about Jesus, he cast out demons by the ruler of the demons. And if you look with me in Matthew chapter 12, it says in verse 22, then there was brought to him a demon-possessed man who was blind and dumb, and he healed him so that the dumb man spoke and saw. And all the multitudes were amazed and began to say, this man cannot be the son of David, can he? But when the Pharisees heard it, they said, this man cast out demons only by Beelzebul, the ruler of the demons. As you come to Matthew chapter 10, Jesus hits upon a sore spot of every one of us. As we know, we've been called to proclaim this wonderful gospel, both in our life as well as by word of mouth. We're called to do it unapologetically. We're not necessarily a group of talented people. We haven't had a lot of training, perhaps, in speech. But God nevertheless has called us. In some cases, we feel ill-equipped. But for that very reason, God has called us. That we might not put our trust in our flesh, but our trust in Him. But we have a lot of trepidation about saying anything. I mean, be honest with yourself. That's a scary thought. To just walk up to somebody, or the Spirit of God is moving your heart, and you know you need to talk to Him, but it's just too hard because the fear starts coming into your heart. What kind of fear is it? Well, Jesus begins to describe a kind of fear that deals with what people are thinking and how you're perceived. And it is that fear of loss of reputation. Who will they think that I am? I mean, if I say something, then they're going to perceive me as, and you fill in the blank. I mean, everybody has their ideas of how somebody is going to perceive them. And there's a fear of a loss of reputation, a defamation of character, character assassination. Perhaps I'm going to be misunderstood, or I'm going to be misidentified, or somebody is somehow going to mislabel me as this Jesus freak. Afraid of how you're going to be pigeonholed. Admit it. The fearful thing. Jesus puts all the marbles on the table. And he said, so you're afraid they're going to call you Satan. You're afraid that they're going to defame you. Join the club, he says. They've already called me that. I oftentimes think of a passage in 3 John in which John talks about Diotrephes, and his statement is, Diotrephes unjustly accuses us. You're going to be unjustly accused. Paul will write in 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 8, in dishonor, by evil report, regarded as deceivers, yet true. You're going to be misunderstood. How can I do this? How can I be bold for Christ and still keep my reputation intact? You probably won't. It doesn't mean that you should do bad things out there and mess up your reputation, but people are going to attack you. They're going to attack your character. Paul writes in 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 13, when we are slandered, we try to comfort. They're going to be coming at you. What's his answer to this? Well, his statement is, it is enough for a disciple to become as a teacher and a slave as his master. They've already called me Lord of the Flies. What do you think they're going to call you? Jesus talks about this in John chapter 15, if you turn there with me. He says in John chapter 15, verse 16, you didn't choose me, but I chose you. I appointed you to go bear fruit, that your fruit should remain. Whatever you ask of the Father in my name, he may give it to you. This I command, that you love one another. If the world hates you, you know that it's hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world would love its own. Because you're not of the world, but I chose you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. Remember the word that I said, a slave is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they're going to persecute you. If they kept my word, they'll keep yours also. You're of the household of God. Clearly, I can't think of anybody that was more misunderstood than Jesus Christ. He gets on the cross, and the cries from the ground are, Physician! Heal yourself. How could you so misunderstand him? He's there to lay down his life. You healed others. You can't heal yourself. No, he healed others. And he is healing for eternity. Everything he did was with a purpose. No, he wasn't crying for Elijah on the cross. He was crying out to his father. But almost everything that he was doing was misunderstood. The very day of victory was declared a day of defeat by the enemy. Yet it was not so. Jesus says, if they do it to me, what do you think they're going to do to you? Now, at the onset, that doesn't seem to be a lot of comfort. But if you read with me, he writes this in verse 6, which seems to be, therefore do not fear, seems to be cumulative result. In other words, in light of who you're identified with, do not be afraid. Verse 26, therefore do not fear them, for there is nothing covered that will not be revealed. Matthew 10:26. And hidden that will not be made known. Well, Jesus is conveying something to us. What is it that would embolden us? What is it that would encourage us? What is it that would keep you from being afraid of your loss of reputation? Well, Jesus states it within the text. Everything will be revealed. Justice will prevail. Why you do what you do, who you do it for, why they do what they do, who they do it for, will all be revealed someday. Yeah, but what about my name? I'm going to take care of that. I'm the revealer of all things, and I'll reveal truth to you. Nothing will be hidden. I'll make it right. It's a promise to his disciples. We look forward to a day of vindication. We know that God will bring that to light. God will examine the motives of men's heart and will judge accordingly. All things will be laid bare. But we as believers look forward to that because it is a day in which God will declare what truth and who we were serving, and that it wasn't the enemy. It was God himself. God will declare that. You know in your heart. And it's as if he turns to his disciples, and it's almost as if he says, whose opinion are you worried about anyway? You're of my house. Yes, they're going to identify you that way, but that's me. That's how they identify me. Are you ashamed of me? I'm going to reveal all things. It'll be okay. The first concern that he puts forth is the fear of reputation, the loss of reputation. How am I? What am I going to do? What am I going to say? I'll be misunderstood, mislabeled. I'll reveal the truth. The second fear that he talks about is a loss of existence, loss of being. What's the worst that could happen? Well, they could kill me. Not really. Not the worst. And he begins to describe what the worst is. Because the fear that we all have is that we cease to be. We cease to be viable. We cease to be recognizable. We cease to be acceptable to those around us. I've oftentimes heard people say, I don't feel like I'm anybody. I feel like I'm nobody. Why do you think they say that? Because the people around them. Well, there's a fear of your own life, of your existence, of your being, of who you are. Verse 27, what I tell you in the darkness, speak in the light, and what you hear whispered in your ear, proclaim upon the housetops, once again, and do not fear. Imperative, right? Can't be afraid. Do not fear those who kill the body, but are unable to kill the soul. But rather fear him who is able to destroy both the soul and the body in hell. It's interesting to me the division that he makes of the body and the soul. Isn't it to you? Because the soul really is that which identifies the person, who they are. We use the word psyche to really describe the word psuche in the Greek, which is the being of the person, that which makes you unique, that which makes you an individual. It's who you are. So that though you do have a body, it's not simply who you are. Sometimes you can be acting a little different on a particular day and they go, you're not like yourself. Well, you still look the same, but the way that you act is somehow lost. There's a lot of fear about what man can do to us, but God comes back and Jesus proclaims to his disciples, you're afraid of the wrong stuff. These guys can't do anything to you. If I could put it this way, I believe he's basically saying, how can nobody's affect anybody's? Because these people can't control anything of value. Paul actually describes those who are perishing, those who are perishing. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 18, and 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 15, it is his definition of the ungodly. Those who are perishing, he has labeled them such. It is an interesting picture because it shows not only who they are, but where they're going and the road that they're taking. They are on the road of perishing. The psalmist will put it a little bit different in Psalm chapter 9, verse 5 and verse 6. He will talk about those whose name will be blotted out. Blotted out. Let's take it a step further. Chapter 9, verse 6. And their memory will be gone. The memory of them will be gone. I remember playing the trumpet, and I hated playing in front of groups, and my mother says, get up there and play that solo. So I get up there and play, and I say, but what if I make a mistake? What are they? She goes, honey, you'll probably never see these people again. So it won't really matter. And that's what Jesus is saying. You'll never see these people again. It doesn't matter. These are the perishing ones. These are the ones whose name are blotted out. These are the ones whose memory is gone. And you're worried about them. Do not fear those who can kill the body. Fear the one who can take away your identity, who you are, your eternal existence. If you exist in the eyes of the non-existent ones, what kind of existence have you gained? If nobody hates you, then what's the problem? We think recognition and acceptance and affirmation makes us somebody. No. Recognition by God makes you somebody. And he's the one that counts. What are you afraid of? Jesus says. There's a third fear as we pick up in verse 29. The fear is a loss of worth, value. Man tends to discard people so easily. They don't agree with them, so they just discard you. They don't care, but not God. God doesn't think the way man does. And I think in one of the most comforting passages of all of Scripture, it's interesting, this past week I received a card from my mother, and on the front of the card was this simple phrase, are not two sparrows sold for a cent, and yet not one of them will fall to the ground apart from your Father. Actually, on the front of the card this week. She didn't know I was going through this particular passage. But it was just a good reminder that the Lord was reminding me that I know who you are and you're worth something to me. You'll go out into the world and people will regard you as meaningless. They'll regard you as valueless. They will say such. But that doesn't mean it's true. And it's for this reason that Jesus describes what he describes in these next verses. And it's very important that you take this home with you. If you'll pick up with me in verse 29, are not two sparrows sold for a single penny? They couldn't figure out any translation that could put the smallest of coin in any better than a penny, which seems to be more meaningless now than ever before. The point of the passage is how man regards life. You see, man would buy and sell life and perceive this tiny little being as worthless, even a cent. But God turns and he says, but that's not how I value that sparrow. I see that value, that sparrow as immensely valuable. Man has a twisted sense of value, doesn't he? Matthew chapter 15, verses 1 through 9, it seems interesting that man would easily discard his parents and the care of his parents so that he might have more pocket change. It seems unconscionable, doesn't it? That parents would be so devalued that one of the most valuable relationships that one could have could just be tossed for mere money. Jesus talks about in Luke chapter 14 an ox that falls into a well. Well, they don't mind writing into their law, well, you can rescue a lot on an ox on the Sabbath. That'd be okay. If he falls in the well, you can. And they did. They put that in the Sabbath. It was one of those things you could do, a work you could do, if your ox fell in the well. But Jesus can't heal a man that's hurting. We live in a day and age in which animals are pampered and loved and all kinds of things. And look, I think it's a wonderful thing that people are kind to animals. But I think it's ridiculous when the animals are loved more than people. And it just shows the twistedness of our society. How man will spend an exorbitant amount and be, I've seen people extremely kind to animals and so coarse and hostile to people. And I'm going, where's their standards? Where's their value system? What is going on? Man's standards are messed up, and Jesus wants to convey that. I'm going to send you out in the world, and their standards are all messed up. And they're going to say that you're nobody, and they're going to say you're worthless, but don't believe them. Because they take that little life, and they discard it for a penny, but don't believe them. That sparrow, if it falls to the ground, I see it. It means a lot to me. Are not two sparrows sold for a cent? Yet not one of them will fall to the ground apart from your Father's recognition. The very hairs of your head are all numbered. How important do you think he is? You are to him. How involved do you think he is in your life? When I rise up, when I lie down, you're there with me. All of my thoughts, you know. Your thoughts towards me are like the grain to the sand of the seashore. God's value system is a lot different. That's why I don't fear. When you and I go out in that world and we proclaim that message, there's only one that we care about pleasing. Look, the point is that even if you were nice to people all the time, they still wouldn't be nice back to you. And even if you gave them everything they wanted, that wouldn't make them love you more. If you tried to please them in everything that you could perceive, they would just grow contemptuous. But God will say to you that day, well done, good and faithful servant. I saw your heart, and you did it for me. And you're worth something to me, just who you are. without the performance. I love you. The very hairs of your head are numbered. Therefore, do not let them make you afraid. Because what they think doesn't matter. What they value is out of sync. Just do what I tell you. Are you not far more valuable than sparrows to me? What do you have to be afraid of? If God is for you, who can be against you? What do you have to be afraid of? Nothing. Who are you trying to please? Whose household are you of? Well, I'm going to get a bad name. Christ has already gotten the bad name. They use Jesus as a curse word today. But whose opinion do you care about? Whose house are you of? Who's the one that's going to last forever? And what is the true value system? I choose Jesus. You pray with me. Father, we give you thanks this day for allowing us to become a part of the proclamation of this glorious kingdom. We admit in our flesh we are afraid. We're afraid of what man might try to do to us, or that we might lose reputation and recognition, significance and value. But we realize that man can't give us any of those things anyway. We've been miserable because we've been going to the wrong source to find affirmation. We've been basing our value on man's opinions. That's why we've been so sad. No more. You're the one that counts. And you have told us that we're valuable, for you have died on the cross for us. We must admit we have no idea why. Nevertheless, value is based on what one will pay, and you gave your life. It is because of this that we have great comfort. That you're with us, you're watching over us, you care for us. You only want good for us. And Father, today we want to tell you that we only care what you say. We only care what you think. We only value what you value. With your heads bowed and your eyes closed, perhaps there have been opportunities this last week that you didn't take simply because you were afraid. Afraid of what? What's the worst that could happen? They call you a follower of the devil? What's the worst that could happen? They could take your life? What's the worst that could happen? They discard you as worthless? It doesn't matter. What they say doesn't make it true. Truth will be revealed someday. God's value is the only system that counts. God is asking you to come. care about him more than anything else. Dearly beloved, you're going to find peace in this. Your worry and your frustration and your anxieties and your fears are all coming from what man thinks. You've got to let it go. Take a breath of fresh air today. Find an acceptance that's not based on performance. Breathe in the love of God that values you because of who He is. And don't be afraid anymore to speak His name. You pray, Sonny, please.
There is no fear in Jesus Christ, for by His grace you've been made new. And it's the cross
and sing that with Sonny. What a great song to close.
There